Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and so much for the gentle springtime weather. Another cold storm, more snow in the mountains, the skies so dark and gray. The wind, driven by the wild energy of the angry spirits, the wild energy of the winter storm. It was so cold this morning that I saw a rock climber just stuck to the side of a boulder, frozen solid. Happens a lot out here. I was sort of tired of wearing coats and sweaters every day, but I fished around the back of the closet and I found my old Irish fisherman's sweater, what they call a jumper for unknown reasons. Must be an old Celtic word. And that's when I remembered. It's nearly St. Patrick's Day. Actually, I remembered when I saw the pyramids of Guinness 12-packs at the grocery store, but I remembered all over again on this cold, gray, rainy morning. What we often do on this show is tell some strange tales that go with the season. The Saints' Day, dedicated to the Roman-British evangelist Patrick, the so-called Apostle of Ireland, has become a sort of global binge-drinking exercise that venerates such pagan Irish customs as leaving offerings for the she, which is spelled S-I-D-H-E, or I think in Scots English it's S-I-T-H, but it's pronounced she, like banshee. The supernatural creatures known as the good people or the good neighbors, because it's best not to say their real name. So it's kind of funny that such folklore is remembered on St. Patrick's Day, because St. Patrick supposedly cleansed Ireland of its pagan past, which is not true at all. Even the tales of Patrick's godly deeds are filled with whiskey and goblins. In the story of Patrick and the innkeeper, the evangelist stops at a traveler's inn and yells at the innkeeper for being a cheapskate. He convinces her that a demon lives in the pub cellar and has grown fat on her lack of generosity and her generally dishonest business practices. She must repent and become a good innkeeper. Otherwise, well, I don't know, maybe the demon finally gets so big that the whole joint explodes. The legend doesn't say. But Patrick comes around a while later, I guess he liked this pub, and he finds the innkeeper is now honest. But what is honesty in this case? Filling the whiskey glass right up to the brim, that's what. Patrick notes with approval that everybody at the bar has a cup overflowing with good whiskey. And so he visits the pub cellar with the innkeeper, where they found the demon is nearly starved to death. And then it vanishes in a flash of fire. As an Irish folklore website points out, this is where the phrase drowning the shamrock originates, meaning to have a big glass of whiskey on St. Patrick's Day. The tales of Ireland's many ghosts and goblins are the apparent result of the old gods, the Tuatha De Danann, becoming fairies, supernatural fairies, in the wake of the conversion to Roman monotheism some 1,600 years ago. And while Ireland has in large part shaken off the shackles of all-powerful institutional Catholicism, since the days of the Celtic Revival, the old language and the old pagan beliefs have been embraced and turned into tourist gold, which is better than leprechaun gold because it doesn't turn into a handful of leaves when you come out of the trance. Now, there's something called Wilderness Ireland, a group, I guess, and it has a good description of where to find these supernatural creatures, these mysterious spirits that strongly affect human perception with the magic of fairy glamour. Entrances to the other world of the fairies are everywhere. Caves, tombs, barrows, forts, even tree hollows and roots. Lone hawthorn trees are often referred to as fairy trees. Some places inhabited by fairies are visible only to humans who have the gift, the second sight. Other places are visible just once every 7 years, such as the Green Isle, a fairy island said to sit off the Causeway Coast near Rathlin Island. We have something like that in the Mojave. It's called Lake Manly. You can only see it every 7 years or so in Death Valley. Let's go back to this Wilderness Ireland description. In early Christian times, the people of Ireland associated anything vaguely pagan as being related to the fairies. And in many people, the belief persists to this day. In fact, there are still some folk today who will claim to have seen fairies. Fairy forts are essentially the remains of Iron Age early medieval ring forts, of which there are thousands still remaining in Ireland today. Farmers and landowners often plow and mow around them so as to not incur the wrath of the little people. They will also avoid disturbing Neolithic tombs, stone circles, and standing stones, all thought to be connected to the fairy world. In 1999, a new motorway was rerouted to save a fairy tree. Fear of fairy retribution has caused many projects to topple, protecting these heritage sites and monuments associated with the wee folk. Folklore has played a greater role in protecting these monuments and trees than the official government institutions, end quote. What Wilderness Ireland is saying here is that ancient sites and natural wonders have been protected more often by people who honor the sacred nature of such places than by the environmental agencies that did not appear in Ireland until the modern era. By which point, very little of Ireland's wilderness or native canopy of forest remained. And this is why you hear of people rewilding in Ireland and Scotland and Wales and in Cornwall. They have to. You have no choice when you let sheep turn your once forested lands into treeless, barren hillsides. From the Irish Times, a storyteller answers the old question, what do fairies look like? Some people have told me the fairies are just wee folk who seldom grew more than 3 feet tall, but resembled ordinary human beings in every other way. Their clothing was old-fashioned, and their features were plain, more ugly than handsome. Others have said that they look just like us, and one could be standing beside you when you would not know. But there is a strange look in their eyes that gives them away. Some have said that they are beautiful beyond belief, and when you see one, your life will never be the same. I have heard tell of them being terrible monsters and creatures from your wildest nightmares. Fairies are fallen angels that had nowhere to go, for they could neither enter heaven nor enter hell, and we can't see them at all. Some of the strangest tales of Irish fairies are those collected by a man who lived much of his life in the desert mountains just north of the Mexican border, specifically on a mountain called Tecate Peak. When this lifelong seeker, Walter Evans Wentz, was a student at the new Stanford University, he encountered William Butler Yeats, the great Irish poet. Yeats encouraged the young man to come to the Celtic lands and explore the rich folklore.
Desert Oracle Radio.
The result, after many years of work, was a book called The Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries, from which these next tales come. During 1846 through 1847, the potato crop in Ireland was a failure, and very much suffering resulted. At the time, the country people in these parts attributed the famine to disturbed conditions in the fairy world. Old Thady Steed once told me about the conditions then prevailing. Sure, we could not be any other way. Then I saw the good people, and hundreds besides me saw them too, fighting in the sky over Knockmaw and on towards Galway. And I heard many others say they saw the fighting also. Even today, certain things are due the fairies. For example, 2 years ago in the courtroom here in Tuam, a woman was on trial for watering down milk. And to the surprise of us all who were conducting the proceedings, and it can be added to the great amusement of the onlookers, she swore that she had only added the 3 fairy drops. A girl in this region died on her wedding night while dancing. Soon after her death, she appeared to her husband and said to him, "I'm not dead at all. But I am put away from you now for a time. It may be a long time or a short time, I cannot tell. But I am not badly off. If you want to get me back, you must stand at the gap near the house and catch me as I go by, for I live near there. And I see you, and you do not see me." Well, he was anxious enough to get her back, and he did not waste any time in getting to the gap. When he came to the place, a party of strangers was just coming out, and his wife soon appeared, as plain as could be. But he could not stir a hand or foot to save her. Then there was a scream, and she was gone. The man firmly believed this and would not marry again. Testimony from another witness. I saw the gentry on the strand at Lower Ross's Point about 40 years ago. It was afternoon. I first saw one of them like an officer pointing at me what seemed to be a sword. But when I got on the Greenlands, I saw a great company of gentry like soldiers in red, laughing and shouting. Their leader was a big man, and they were ordinary human size. As a result of this vision, I took to my bed and lay there for weeks. Apparitions from Fairyland. Some 20 or 30 years ago, on the borders of County Sligo, according to the firm belief of one of my own relatives, a sister of his was taken by the fairies on her wedding night, and she appeared to her mother afterwards as an apparition. She seemed to want to speak, but her mother, who was in bed at the time, was thoroughly frightened and turned her face to the wall. The mother is convinced that she saw this apparition of her daughter, and my relative thinks she might have saved her. A collective vision of spiritual beings. Some few weeks before Christmas, 1910, at midnight on a very dark night, I and another young man were on horseback on our way home from Limerick, when we noticed a light about half a mile ahead. At first it seemed to be no more than a light in some house, but as we came nearer to it and it was passing out of our direct line of vision, we saw that it was moving to and fro, up and down, diminishing to a spark, then expanding into a yellow luminous flame. Before we came to Listowel, we noticed two lights about 100 yards to our right, resembling the one seen first. Suddenly, each of these lights expanded into the same sort of yellow luminous flame, about 6 feet high by 4 feet broad. In the midst of each flame, we saw a radiant being having human form, Presently, the lights moved toward one another and made contact. Whereupon, the two beings in them were seen to be walking side by side. The beings' bodies were formed of a pure, dazzling radiance, white like the radiance of the sun, much brighter than the yellow light or aura surrounding them. So dazzling was the radiance, like a halo round their heads, that we could not distinguish the faces of the beings, only the general shape of their bodies. Though their heads were very clearly outlined, because this halo-like radiance was all around them. In our hurry to get home, we were not wise enough to stop and make further examination. But ever since that night, I have frequently seen, both in Ireland and in England, similar lights with spiritual beings within them. Some of the many haunting tales from the fairy faith and Celtic countries, one of the best folklore books ever written, you're listening to Desert Oracle Radio with Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Dear friends, here's something you might want to write down if you enjoy Desert Oracle live events, especially our live campfire events. As we do from time to time, in late April of this year, 2024, we will be doing a couple of nights of secret campfire stories at secure outdoor locations. One location, actually. Just a 15-minute drive from the dreary traffic and crowded everywheres of the famous high desert in springtime. I will have the details next week on this program, and I will put them on the Patreon page first, patreon.com/Desert Oracle, which is what the entertainment industry calls early access. But don't worry, we'll tell you on the radio that same night. Don't worry. These will be ticketed events and intimate, as they say. Happening at sundown on April 26 and 27. I'll also tell you about something we are doing down in San Diego County to remember the late, great Mojo Nixon, who passed away last month. Passed away at sea, that's no lie. And it will soon be time to announce something coming up at the end of July 2024, over four magical evenings in the most beautiful place I know. The spectacular wildlands of the Eastern Sierra. The beginning of something I hope to be doing up there for many summers to come. A amongst the Great Basin sagebrush and the stately pinyon pines. Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from beautiful Antenna Hill between 29 Palms and that other one. What's it called? Jesus Tree, Dollar Tree, can't remember anymore. If you are in or around these parts, tune in at 10 p.m. Friday nights on your radio. You'll find us at Z107.7 FM, and they play what the lawyers call a classic episode at 10:30 p.m. too. That's a whole hour of DOR on the FM. Otherwise, just get it off the podcast player, which is a federal surveillance device called a cell phone. Make sure only official U.S. employees and their contractors and whoever they buy their data from is allowed to sift through your personal information. Thanks to the good bunch of people who subscribed to our Patreon page this year, patreon.com/Desert Oracle. You can join them for as little as $5 a month, and you'll get some early episodes and bonus live shows and other such material. And except for our closing theme by Pierre Langer, our friend Red Blue Black Silver made the soundscapes you hear along with whatever else was on this program tonight, and you can always find more of his work at Bandcamp until that gets shut down too or sold to TurboTax. Pretty soon we will just be broadcasting on the radio, nothing else, and everything else will be illegal, and hamburgers will cost $50. But we will still do the show somehow. Solar-powered pirate radio barge. Thank you for listening. Don't get blown away. And good night from the voice of the desert.